This is PC Gamer Podcast number 316 for May 16th, 2012. This is the Diablo 3 podcast. Woo. Diablo 3 came out this week, and with me on the Diablo 3 podcast is Tyler Wild, associate editor of PC Gamer, a
demon hunter. Right now.
Fantastic. Doing well. Shooting some bows, shooting some bolos.
Yeah.
Setting some traps.
Setting traps. You know, being all acrobatic and stuff.
Yeah, wearing lots
flying
of
around.
Wearing lots of hoods and scarves. Like, we were making fun of you because it looked like your mom had dressed you. Like, your demon hunter mom.
I had, like a light purple scarf and a... Yeah. I was looking nice and sad and standing with my pelvis thrust outward and my arms hanging back like, ugh. Everything's horrible, man.
Very good. We also have TJ Hafer, intern at PC Gamer Magazine, and a barbarian in Diablo 3 right now.
Indeed. Proud barbarian. I hit things.
Fantastic.
Lots of things. Very hard.
And, of course, Josh Augustine, senior editor, and...
Witch Doctor, shaking the voodoo doll at you and being generally very noble and kind.
You're which weighing is it all, weird. You mean?
Yes.
Yeah. I think we agreed today that the premise for the Witch Doctor is throwing animals at people.
Yes.
Dead or alive.
Yeah, dead or alive. Preferably both.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's a great premise. So Diablo's launch day, of course, was dominated by this these server issues, these login issues that... If you're in North America, you had a lot of trouble getting in. I think people in Europe fared pretty well.
It was pretty bad.
Oh, really?
On launch day, because that's why it almost convinced me not to stay up for launch night, because I saw Rich McCormick and all those guys having trouble. It didn't seem to be nearly as bad, but still some problems.
So for about 24 hours, servers were down for a lot of times, down for periods of 90 minutes or more. And, a lot of people, if you follow us on Twitter, if you follow people on Twitter, I don't think we weren't really being too snarky about it, but a lot of the people in the game industry and people I see on Twitter were really upset about this. We're like, this is insane. I can't play a single player game. This is ridiculous. And I think it's important to point out, I'm still sort of forming my opinion on this. Obviously, I'm not pleased about not being able to play something. I think all of us are, but it's not simply a single player game. I think it's important. I want to remind people just in a fair way about that distinction. You might not be crazy about the auction house. You might not want to use it. You might not ever use it. And I'm sure that's the case for a lot of people. But it is a single player game with an economy, with an economy with characters that store in the cloud. And Blizzard, they made the decision to protect that. And it makes sense in that way in terms of the gameplay experience. But, it opens the potential for what happened, I think, at launch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. Diablo 3 isn't a single-player game. Diablo 2 was a single-player game. That's great. But Diablo 3 is not Diablo 2. And I think a lot of people are just saying, oh, well, it's the same sort of game. It's a single-player. No, you can click buttons. Like, as soon as you start the game, you can click a button and join your friend. I was playing by myself, but people were jumping in my game and all sorts of stuff. Like, all this stuff is going on. It's not a single-player game. You have friends lists. You have all sorts of stuff going on.
Yeah,
you might want it to be a single-player game, but it's not.
Its infrastructure is an MMO where you just happen to be in your own instance.
Yeah.
Most, if you're playing by yourself. But I do, when it was working today and everything was working smoothly, it worked really smoothly. And it was super easy to join you guys and just, hey, now I'm wandering around with Evan. And I teleported over to where you are and it scaled things well too. I leveled up pretty fast and got like a good 10 levels.
So you caught up to us.
Yeah, I think
in an hour.
It does something where it's supposed to get you to catch up to whoever the highest person in your group is. Because when Josh and I were playing on launch night, he started out level 5 and I was level 2, and we both hit level 6 at around the same time, I think. So. Mm.
But then, you were carrying the weight of that team. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course.
Sorry, he was stealing my XP.
So what's the appropriate response, we think? Obviously, we want to encourage people to feel how they feel about this issue. It seemed to be done by now. We're podcasting on Wednesday, so this is almost 48 hours after launch. It's maybe 36 hours or 40 hours or something. How do you guys feel? How do you think an average gamer should feel? I feel really empathetic toward... the guy that hasn't owned a PC in 5 years or something, built a PC to play this game or came back I feel bad for those folks that don't understand how PC gaming has changed and this is their first touch on it in a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's sympathetic, absolutely. People can get angry if they want to, they can be upset, that's totally fine. I mean, they have reason to be upset. But at the end of the day, I don't think it was unexpected. I don't think this is something that people like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this has happened. If you are genuinely surprised, if you've been in PC gaming, for those that haven't been in PC gaming, like Evan was saying, obviously they had no clue. But if you've been in PC gaming a while, you should know this sort of thing is going to happen. It seems like it's done. If it is done from here on out, I don't think there's any reason to hold a grudge against Blizzard.
I kind of have to come down on the side, though, of I kind of agree with the camp that I don't really see why there couldn't be a mode where you can just play through the single player campaign and not have any of your items or experience or characters transfer online.
Yeah.
I honestly don't see a significant reason why they couldn't have that as a mode that you enable by choice.
And I think Blizzard wouldn't tell you this, but they want all the data that you're generating within the game, like, for like balancing purposes, which do help people, like, oh, 20% of players died at this boss. They want to know stuff like that, and they don't want to encourage people to create this like second sect of like local information and local playthroughs that they don't have access to.
Yeah,
I know that's the case for StarCraft, for example.
And I think a big thing for Blizzard is they have always been big believers, and they know what makes the best game experience. And they genuinely 100% believe that the better game experience is playing online and having friends, having co-op. They believe that that makes a better game, and they're going to force that on you. That has always been Blizzard's philosophy, that they know what's best. And in many, 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 many cases, it's proven right. This is one situation where maybe 2 years from now, we'll look back and be like, yeah, you know, it's good that we made that leap. It does make the game better in the long run. Obviously, you know, there are frustrations along the way, but yeah. That's why I think Blizzard did it. They think it's better.
Yeah. I mean, I pointed this out during our live stream, a sort of a separate issue, sort of about games in general, online games in general, but I feel like the lack of feedback in the login screens is problematic.
Yes.
Okay, so I mean, you know, Error 37 was trending over Twitter worldwide on launch night, and you know, there's all these little error messages, and you know, from a user experience, like, we're very savvy and our listeners are very savvy, but imagine, you know, that guy doesn't play PC games every day of the week, and he tries to log in, and you know, he has to type it into Google. He's digging through forums he's never been on before. He's trying again, like, he's basically in a position to just spam the login button to try and get it to work. He's not following the Blizzard customer service person on Twitter, you know. He's in the dark, and like, I would just love to see modern login systems, even though 99% of the time, like, for the lifetime of the game, you're just going to log in fine. Give me some feedback about where I am. Like, am I stuck? Is my game crashed? Is it me? Is it you? You know, should I wait longer? Should I reinstall the game? I can find this, some of this stuff out. But I mean, you Josh, like, you got an error at one point that made you think you had to reinstall.
Yeah, it said like configuration files for joining game not found. And
I got
so
that too.
I saw that and I immediately thought, because it's happened with WoW before, like, the install's corrupt. Like, I need to repair it, but I couldn't find repair tools, so I didn't know, like, should I uninstall it? I had to Google, and I the forums I found were from the beta, and so I found advice there for how to deal with it in the beta. But is it different now that it's live? Like, yeah, that was one incredibly frustrating thing, and it seems to be something that's fairly standard across the industry, which is very frustrating. Like, they just don't tell you what's going on. It's error messages meant for programmers, not for gamers.
Exactly, and it's actually something that happens on Steam a lot. You guys have probably gotten the game not available at this time message on Steam sometimes.
Well, why not?
And it's like, well, I'm online. Like, what's... And the solution to that problem 99% of the time is verify the integrity of that game cache. And it'll just check, like, oh, actually, like, this file's corrupted or something, or you need to re-download this one. And it fixes it, but you have to Google and go to a forum thread and figure, like, and that's fine. Like, PC gamers are fine with that. But wouldn't it be easier just really tell me what the actual problem is and, like, point me to the solution, you know, within the context of the program? I don't know.
Yeah, like, it's, when it says program not available at this time, would you like to run a check on the cache? Like, okay, yeah.
And something that almost every launcher has, like, if you look at the Tribes launcher, is, are the servers up or down? Give me a green or red light.
Yes.
Whereas in Diablo, the only way to know is to look down and see, oh, do they have scheduled server maintenance that they've mentioned in the little news feed or not? Most people are probably just going to start spamming login, and probably were during the downtime yesterday.
I mean, I got at least 12 different error messages. Like, we were joking about making Diablo error message bingo cards, and it all just amounted to there's something wrong with the servers. So they could have just submitted that data to the programmers and had, there's something wrong with the servers. Error one of one. There's only one error message. So, you know,
But yeah, I mean, especially when it sort of will time out on the retrieving your characters.
Like,
it's
true.
Totally unclear whether it's like, did I stop communicating with the servers? Are they just overloaded, or is the game crashed? Is it is it just frozen?
So one kind of funny side effect of the bugs that I thought was good. On launch night, one of the big bugs was like you'd be at character select or character creation, and it would time out. And so I kept trying to create Demon Hunters because I just wanted to get in. So Demon Hunter, Demon Hunter, Demon Hunter, Demon Hunter.
Did you end up with 8 of them?
Yeah, when I logged back.
Same thing happened to me.
The very next morning, it's just like tons of identical level one Demon Hunters filling up my character screen. Like, all right.
My army is ready.
Yes. All the demons shall be hunted.
So how do we feel about the content of the game itself? I mean, obviously, we're not super thrilled with the launch. It seems behind us now. We played for 3 hours today together. Worked fine. Mm-hmm. Maybe one or two instances of lag, whatever. I can deal with that. Do you like Diablo 3?
Yeah, I'll go first.
And how much?
I'm liking it a lot. It's one of those things where it remains to be seen whether kind of the story is good or whether I'll want to keep going after the first playthrough. But I'm loving the Witch Doctor, the spells, like the graphics, not in the sense of like fidelity, but in, I don't know, how do you say it? Like, the visuals are just really cool. They're unique.
The art direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go. And just and beyond art direction, just the fact, like, throwing frogs at people and throwing jars filled with spiders. Like, that's just a cool idea. There's so much
That's what I did as a kid in my neighborhood. I just throw jars of spiders at people.
And now that we're starting to see more and more enemy types as we're kind of getting higher level, like, there's just a lot of really cool stuff in it. Like, it's just fun to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree on the gameplay. The gameplay is super solid. It's the most fun I've ever had with a game of this type, really. I think that the sort of kill streak system is awesome with, like, you get extra XP for killing a bunch of monsters in a row without stopping or killing a bunch of monsters in a single blow.
Yeah, that in particular feels like, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you're trying to keep a ball in the air or something.
Yeah.
You're trying to keep something going.
So it's like I'll throw my axe at that guy because my jump isn't off cooldown, but I can't stop fighting or I'm going to lose my streak.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's nice. We were talking today about the fact that they sort of removed identify scrolls and town portals. Mm-hmm. You know, they basically are infinite, you know.
I don't miss them.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. Barbarian's super fun class. It's definitely the kind of class I like where you can just have two giant axes and beat things up.
Are you enjoying it more than Barbarian in D2?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the gameplay is all around better than D2, although I do miss my Wolf Barb from D2.
I
hope they give you a lycanthropy ability for the Barbarian at some point. So.
Yeah. What do you think, Tyler?
I'm enjoying it. I don't like the Demon Hunter as much as I thought I would right now.
Told you, dude. It's that animation and that model. It's terrible.
It's not the dude being all weird. It's just like, it's starting to get a little, well, I would sound ridiculous if I said Diablo's repetitive. because yes. But yeah, I don't know. So I really need to try another class. I'm just getting tired of standing back and shooting arrows.
Yeah.
I guess. I think the Barbarian, just that, yes, essentially you're doing the same thing. You're clicking on things, but just that more just like up in smashing things and making them fly might give me the feedback I'm looking for, because something about an arrow hitting someone just isn't the right feedback for me. But I'm enjoying it all around. I mean, I love the look of it. Evan, you were kind of complaining that maybe the lighting was kind of dull to you. It does feel like everything kind of has just a very dull ambient light.
It's super
over it.
Global.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like there's very little. There's no instances that we're close to the end of Act 1. I think as a group, we're all about level 12. Is that where you are?
I'm like at the beginning, first third of Act 2.
Okay.
So high teens.
Yeah. So we're still working through like the first third or so of the game. But I haven't encountered like any instances where like light is coming through a window, or light is like coming in rays or something like that, or like there's a candlelight that really feels dynamic as I walk through it, that I'm like sort of being bathed by this. The most like fair way I can put it, I've legitimately just checked my graphics settings twice now on my work PC and at my home PC and been like, wait, do I really have things turned all the way up? Because I don't think I do. I feel like there's something missing there in the detail and
I like that my glowing weapon is sort of casting light on the walls around me. I wish that things were casting harsher shadows. Like, I wish that when you walked in front of a candle or something, it would make...
Yeah, you really feel like the angle's changing on something.
Yeah, because that kind of helps the space become more believable when you see that kind of stuff. But I think overall, the art direction itself is beautiful, and it's just fun to look at. I prefer being outside in an open field. I think they just always look way cooler than the actual dungeons.
All those ditches with, like, the hanged people.
Yeah.
That's so cool
stuff.
Well, and, I mean, the art functions very well. Like, they do a good job of desaturating that stuff that you shouldn't care about or is, like, very low priority, so to speak. And, I mean, battles are actually pretty readable. I mean, compared to something like, you know, you think about a sort of scrum in League of Legends where players are getting together with enemies and stuff or minions. And, I mean... You know, I lose myself sometimes, but it still feels okay. I don't like sort of get that brain numbing feeling. You know what I'm talking about?
Where you're like clicking everywhere.
Like
that's
because
you're not playing
doing?
A barbarian. Yeah. It's just every single fight.
Well, I'll say it was a little tough when we were fighting spiders and Josh was throwing jars of spiders.
Yeah,
at him.
I did that just
which
to mess with
spiders
you guys.
Do I hit?
And I mean, this is strange, but I actually have abilities that can mitigate that too. Like I can freeze everything if I feel confused. I can just hit stop. You know?
Yeah.
Hit pause for a few seconds, and then we can deal with this stuff.
Yeah, my favorite art element so far, it's kind of small, but I love the blood that splatters on the ground, especially when the big guys explode. It's like pastel. It's like a weird pastel purple that goes on the ground, but I don't know something about it. Like, I just love the way it looks. It looks really cool. Hmm.
Story-wise for me, all I've played is the live stream we did with us all kind of talking over each other and talking over the dialogue, but it's kind of... the same problem I had with Diablo 2 in that it's like I just kind of have these little voices in my head always, and I don't connect well to the little NPCs on the screen that are, it's like, oh, this guy's talking to me now, and I'm kind of looking at my inventory and someone's kind of talking to me. So even though I love the lore and the backstory of Diablo, like I love the whole sanctuary thing and the angels and demons, but yeah, when I'm in the game, it never really gets me excited to go on a quest because it's like,
What's helping me a little bit with that, and I do feel similarly, is that the female wizard's voice actor, all the classes and actually genders have individual voice actors or actresses. She's kind of a jerk, and she's not just this, like, you know, I'm here for my humble town, and I'm here to save the world. She's kind of just, like, arrogant. Like, she doesn't say things explicitly, but it's just kind of implied, and that's nice.
I'm just wondering if playing with two other people, if I will be able to enjoy the story, if I really just need to go through alone and sit there and listen to every single lore book I pick up.
I think you do, because missing those audiobooks is a big deal for me. But
no one wants to sit and wait for you to finish listening
audiobooks,
to it.
Yeah, like we're basically making our own story on Skype, essentially, is the way I'm looking at it. Like, I'm trading Diablo 3's story for our, like, social story.
Yeah.
Which is kind of great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. But
yeah, I feel the same way, too. I won't do spoilers, but at one point someone dies. and when that person dies who you have met before, like, I feel...
that kind of narrows
felt
it down.
Nothing. And, like, it was clear, like, I should have felt something. Yeah. Like, I should have cared that this was happening, and I didn't. I was just like, all right, let's move it on. Like, just die so we can move already.
Like, I feel like that should not have been an engine cutscene.
No.
Yes.
If they want to make me care about something in Diablo, it can't be an engine, because at any time in engine, I feel like I could hit the scroll wheel, go out, and see my whole Sim City and start playing. You know, because they're all just these little Sims, basically, that I can... I mean, I'm not saying they look like them. I'm detached. I'm got like a godlike perspective over it.
And like Tyler was saying, you're pulling up your inventory and comparing belts while this is happening.
Yeah, we were joking that like serious important things were happening, or Josh is being attacked, and meanwhile Evan and I are like, oh, what kind of rings do you have?
Let me see your rings, bro.
Can I see your rings?
Magic find or plus XP or?
So we're comparing jewelry. Yeah. So there's just so much idle stuff that
it's
you're
also
doing. It's hard to get attached to your character.
The main plot is kind of, I found it to be super predictable. Like, everything that was supposed to be an, oh my gosh, I can't believe it moment has just been like, oh, really? Is that who that is?
It's all going to be a dream in the end.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like I already know where the game is going from here, but maybe Blizzard will surprise me. I'd be happy if that turned out to be the case.
So it's really funny to me we haven't brought this up. I actually haven't heard anybody talk about this no one's mentioning the lack of level randomization.
Is there a lack of level randomization?
The levels aren't randomized, right?
Yeah, they are.
I think they are. I'm pretty sure they are.
The geometry?
Yeah, because I played through beta twice and then live. I mean, there's certain rooms that are always the same, I think. Like where you meet the Templar, that room is always set up the same. But it is random, yeah.
I guess it's, maybe I'm bringing it up because it's like the lack of doors. You know, finally the games can, there are very few doors in the game. And, old Diablo is like you're opening a door and it's basically this evil slot machine with skeletons in it that want to kill you. And that experience is kind of gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never got that feeling. Sometimes you break through a door in there, but I usually feel like if there is a door, it's a place you need to be going next. Like a door just leads to another section that may or may not have random elements. But
there are those fire pits that zombies crawl out of very slowly. Mm-hmm. It's like, dead, okay, wait for him to spawn so he has a hitbox. Dead, okay, how many of these do I have to do? Dead.
Yeah.
So
I don't know, maybe that's an achievement on Blizzard's part that I don't get the sense of it being a randomized game. I don't know.
The architecture doesn't feel like it's randomized.
No, not
at all.
That's
definitely true.
Huh.
Yeah. No matter how it generates, it always feels really seamless and handmade.
Yeah. Yeah. The one or other point I want to bring up is the one thing that kind of bothers me. This is a phrase that a lot of people are using, and I don't want to get lumped in with this group, but like a lot of the stuff is dumbed down by default. All of the default settings in the game set it to the most simplistic, stupid, it's not stupid. It's built for stupid people. Like they don't want to overwhelm you at all. Like they assume that you haven't played any game ever. So it's like your skills can go in any slot. But instead, they say, oh, no, here's a primary, here's a defensive, here's a utility, pick one from each. Yeah. And you think you're forced into that, so you do that, and then you realize, like, oh, I can change all of them, but you have to go into a weird submenu and find it.
Right.
And the tooltips are all just, like, deals damage.
Hit a guy in the
head. Slows more. But then if you turn on advanced tooltips, it tells you, like, the actual numbers, 110%, 180%. Yeah. Like, that's the stuff that gamers want. Like, we want to know those fine details.
Mm-hmm. No, we really do. I mean, that was one of my complaints about Mass Effect 3's multiplayer, that as I'm upgrading these skills, it's not really actually revealing any of the math to me. So I don't know if these, how many units is, in-game units is it measuring for, like, distance? I don't know. Like, it's all relative.
The same weapon with a number on it and another bar under range. What's a bar?
If you don't know what Josh is talking about, it like a good analogy, kind of a stupid analogy, would be like, okay, you can make your lunch, but you have to have a type of sandwich, you have to have a type of chips, and you have to have like a fruit snack. But in actuality, you can just build your lunch out of whatever the hell
you
want.
All chips. Yeah. You want five different kinds of chips.
Maybe you want all cucumbers.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you say that, they're like, okay, I guess you can do it. It's like, well, why didn't you tell me that?
Yeah.
Why did you tell me I had to build it the other way?
Yeah.
And this kind of relates to the problems with not getting accurate or informative error messages. A lot of the game feels like it's not telling us the things we need to know. And I can't remember other examples. I mean, that's one of them where it's like someone has to tell you, oh, go into the menu. There's an option. Because an option isn't even, like, named clearly.
No. What is it called?
It's called elective mode. And I saw it
what?
When I it first logged in, and I had no idea what it did, so I left it off.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
Yeah.
But I will say, on a positive note, I am loving... I'm a completionist, and I love clearing every little inch. There's something incredibly satisfying about opening the map and being like, yes, I did get every little section. And then, there's a tiny little, unexposed spot. I'm going to run down there.
There might be a barrel
there. Yeah, exactly. So I run down there. And when you clear that whole map, it is a very good feeling. Like, I wish there was some, like, way that the game told you, like, you finished this section. Like, you killed everything on this part of the map. Like, that would just make me explode.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
I'm not sure if there's a word to describe that feeling of just like having cleaned up.
Yes.
And it's kind of a technique used in other games, like social games, Facebook games, the idea of pulling weeds out of your garden. Something about completely clearing a map of everything that there is to kill, get, do.
Yeah.
Just, so satisfying.
It's like subtraction is, that's been around since Pac-Man.
Right.
Yeah. Really,
clearing a board.
Yeah, it just feels so good.
It's a classic gaming feeling. For me, I mean, the thing I appreciate most about Diablo right now is I think this is a really kind of an accomplishment of the balance and how experienced Blizzard are as game balancers. the game makes me feel powerful while still giving me enemies that feel relatively powerful. You know, we were sort of complaining early on that, oh, this is pretty easy. The first act is, you know, first part of the first act, at least, we were breezing through, doing whatever we wanted. But, you know, my wizard emits this ray of frost. It looks crazy, lights up the game world. I want to use it all the time because I just feel powerful. But it still doesn't kill stuff instantly, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And that's a hard thing, like, because if you go too far in one direction, suddenly there's this discrepancy between what's happening visually and how much damage is being done, because the visuals have to convey this. But you're also leveling up over time, and there's runes that are adding damage to those systems or different effects to those spells. So that's a really hard thing to design around.
Yeah,
you're basically Superman, but you're punching people five times instead of like, well, wait, I'm Superman. It should just be one punch. My eyes are lasers. Like, why aren't they dying instantly? So I don't know. That's a total achievement to me.
And they scale the world with the different number of players. And I've played with one, two, and three. I haven't played with four. But with all of those, like, the balance still feels identical. Like, it's really impressive.
Mm-hmm. I guess that visual discrepancy is one reason I don't love the Demon Hunter, because I feel like the Demon Hunter mostly has practical attacks and stuff. But, yeah, like, the rapid fire shot, I'm shooting it makes you feel like a turret. It looks really cool. You're basically going shooting arrows rapid fire, but I start to feel silly after I'm just shooting thousands of arrows into a crowd. Yeah. And there's no visual evidence of them. And the same I kind of feel for like the bullet shot. Like it's an explosive. It's a practical explosive, but I don't get the sense that I'm blowing chunks off of anything. It's just kind of going poof, and there's kind of an explosion in there. I do like the sound effect of shooting it though. It goes whoop, whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like whereas the wizard is magic, and you got this magic beam, and it's going to do a certain amount of damage and look really cool, but you don't need any practical explanation for why it does, how much damage it does. And the barbarian, I think, has great visual feedback of just pelting things through the air, and that happens when you've seriously hurt it or killed it.
Yeah. The Demon Hunter, I don't know how, I'm sure this is technically a lot more difficult than I would guess. But, like, it'd be so cool with the Demon Hunter, because the Barbarian has that thing where they punt because they hit so hard. The Demon Hunter needs something, like, where enemies periodically, like, get stuck to walls or something by your arrows when you kill them, like, thump, and they just hang
there. I don't
know
if any more powerful Demon Hunter skills might have that effect, because there is one piercing arrow that it does cause an arrow to go through their head and stay there.
Oh, really?
Which, that also is kind of silly, because you see, like, if you keep using it, you'll see six or seven enemies just with arrows going through their bodies.
Nice.
But those are the only, like, persistent arrows I've seen, and I've never seen anyone get knocked back or stuck or anything, but it's got a physics system. It could be done. Seems like something they would do.
Yeah.
So now that we've played a few hours of it, I wanted to, as an exercise, as a group, like, sort of design the next Diablo character, next Diablo class. The expansion's probably going to have two, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll probably have two. I think that's what we expect, but
mimicking Diablo 2.
You know, and we sort of talked about it, making Diablo 2. I think we've sort of casually been talking about, you know, what's lacking right now. Although the Barbarian and the Witch Doctor, I found out today, can use shields. Witch Doctor can use...
Witch Doctor can use almost anything. He can't use fist weapons and
I was watching
wands.
I was watching you on the stream, and I was like, is there anything that you can't equip as a Witch Doctor?
It's so good. Like, anything you pick up, I'm just going to toss it on and see how I look.
What's the problem? I can hold it, right?
Yeah.
I can swing it. But, you know, sort of in terms of the experience, that now that you've had some experience in Diablo 3, what do you want from that game, like, as a character? Like, for me, it is kind of a sword and shield paladin type guy.
Yeah, that is it. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, male-style armor.
Because I really want to play a tank. I love the sword and shield. The Barbarian just doesn't have that feel to me. Like, I know I can make him into a tank, but I don't want to. The Barbarian, to me, should have the giant weapon. He should be out there. I don't want him with that sword and shield, but I do want someone that is hardy, a Templar. Like, that sort of thing would be perfect.
You might like him at higher levels, though, for the same reason I'm getting kind of annoyed, because after about, you know, level 19, your armor starts to look more like a knight and less like a feral warrior.
Intriguing.
Like, I just got
it's
a
very decorative.
I really don't like.
Yeah.
But yeah, the class I want is also the class I think we're going to get, just because of how much lore they've put into the area where these guys are from in the books, even though they're not in the game yet, which is the Druid. Mm. I don't think that any of the current classes really cover that role, and it's different thematically.
You don't think animal summoning is already covered by the Witch Doctor?
Well, I mean, you know, the demon, even the demon hunter has like an animal summon skill. I don't think that's.
I want that ferret.
You know.
Yeah, and to be fair, nothing about the witch doctor's animals is natural. Where I think the druid would be like pretty wolves and stuff like that.
Right.
And the witch doctor is more like, I'm going to slaughter frogs than pour their guts all over you.
And the druid can transform, which is something that, with the exception of that one mage skill that isn't in the game yet. And they could even do it like WoW, where the different forms
are. Wait, Archon isn't in the game yet? The wizard skill?
I that sentence is not what I actually was thinking. It
just
kind of came out that way.
It's selectable, yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, which is way at the top is what I meant to say.
Okay.
And yeah, they could make it a core part of the game, the different, you know, druid forms. So
I mean, it's kind of funny to me. I don't think I would have to look further in the skill trees. Josh, you might know, but I didn't see any support abilities. I saw defensive abilities.
The monk has a lot of support ones. Yeah, the monk is really the only one I think that can heal. Yeah, but he has a fair amount of healing skills.
Because that's kind of partly what the paladin fulfilled in Diablo 2, right? I mean, he had sort of defensive buffs and like AoE buffs, right, for defense.
Right. Kind of the aura thing that Blizzard has used for every paladin in every game.
The monk actually has a lot of that stuff. It has the auras as well, and it has that sort of stuff. Monk is very cool. It's just a very different visual style, and it's not really what I want.
You don't want to do like 180s and stuff.
No, dude. They're okay.
Around.
Like, punching is cool, but then you can't even use the cool weapons. I mean, I guess you could use a staff, but come on. What am I, Robin?
Yeah. I mean, the staffs are cool, but the monk does feel out of place to me in the universe. Just, I feel weird doing acrobatics with a staff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just feels strange to me. But I agree on the knight, a sort of like paladin or knight. I want big knight armor, shiny metal.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I don't know what the armor looks like later in the game, but it just, nothing to me feels like your classic knight.
Yeah. In Diablo, is there any sort of equivalent of, well, I guess maybe the demon hunter? Because the demon hunter is like possessed, right? Well, I was trying to think of something that like uses the powers of hell against
it. Yeah,
necromancer. Sort of
demon hunter does do that, yeah.
Yeah, but I agree with you, Tyler. I mean, just the specific stance of a knight. You know, it has a very specific, like, I'm holding like my sword a little bit behind me. I got my shield out, like, protecting my entire torso. I don't know, that's not...
Kind of push forward, be a great, like, slam attack with the shield.
Yeah,
that could,
shield bash.
Like, knock back a bunch.
I mean, even in the character selection menu, I mean, the barbarian is just this kind of loose, you know,
whatever,
you can hit me, you can beat me up, I don't care.
I like the rigidness of a knight character. It just makes such forceful movements. It doesn't have to be particularly graceful. It's just got a big sword and a big shield.
Yeah. And when you slam that shield in the ground, just like, I'm not going anywhere. And the enemy is just like kind of crash against you, but you don't move. Like, it's such a cool feeling.
You guys have any like left field ideas for classes? I mean, say that Blizzard doesn't want to retread any existing archetypes. For, you know, they don't want to do a necromancer for whatever reason they've decided. Mm-hmm. They don't want to do an Amazon. They don't want to do a paladin. What else is there?
Maybe like a blade master, like a samurai type character could be interesting.
Mad chemist of some kind.
I always like going for the sort of tinker engineer style stuff. And I don't know if they could introduce, I mean, they have practical explosives and stuff, so guns are not really out of the question.
I think they specifically said, like, one of the things they talked about in designing the Demon Hunter is they don't want guns in Diablo, though.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, we're talking left field, so, like, a tinker kind of guy who can build, like, little mechanical
pets.
Be a
technomage.
And, use sort of, like, higher tech stuff than exists in the rest of the world. It might just be a cool-looking juxtaposition.
Yeah, there could be something... hate to use the same word that Guild Wars 2 does, but like a mesmer, like an illusionist sort of thing, like creating a lot of fake enemies and stuff that's more about controlling. I would find that really interesting.
Terrific. All right. Do we have any closing comments? We covered it pretty well. I mean, we're continuing to play this. We'll talk about it again next week.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. But
I'm just curious. Are you guys, do you think you're going to play this through to completion? Is this something that you're enjoying enough to keep going?
I think I'm going to at least play it through on each difficulty. Because I want to be able to say I beat Inferno. So,
yeah, I think I'm going to start a new character, and I do want to play it through to completion, but I haven't decided yet whether I want to do my, like, one man, I'm going to talk to everyone, read all the lore playthrough first, or if I just want to play through with people I know. If you play through with people you know, you're going to be jumping around a bit, is the thing.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to follow a coherent story as easily.
I'm going to play through it solo first, for sure.
I think I might do that.
Yeah,
because
otherwise you're going to see the ending coming because you already saw it the first time.
Like. Yeah, it's just kind of unfortunate that the co-op is so fun, but not necessarily the best first-time experience, especially if someone isn't respecting the way you want to play and
totally
is
agree.
You know, running ahead or whatever, which people have related that experience. So,
because
I really want to get into playing a bunch of co-op, but I guess I just need to buckle down and get through it on my own first.
I think the one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to just play co-op with people that are starting, like starting new characters. Because I'll play through that starter area. I don't mind repeating that content over and over, but it's like I won't co-op with anyone
that's
high level.
Especially with a new class that you haven't played before.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. I agree. I mean, it's sort of analogous to Portal 2. Portal 2 co-op, like that first playthrough, that first co-op experience, you don't want to play with anybody that knows all the puzzles. I mean, that ruins that process of discovery. And in the same way, if you're going to play co-op, we really encourage you guys to find somebody that respects the pace that you want to play the game at. If you want to just breeze through and loot and you don't care about journal and entries and codices or whatever, that's cool. But I mean, you want to avoid that tug of war, right?
Yeah.
Of hold on, I want to, like, you know, we've all played those types of games, WoW or something else, with guys that want to, every time loot drops, like, stop, check their inventory, really think about it, like,
do some calculations onto the paper.
It's even worse in Tor, because it's like, well, maybe one of my companions could use this.
So long term, if I have +2, like, to find magical items, is that worth the loss in vitality?
See, and every time I clear a round of enemies, I guess you could say, I want to stop and look at everything I have, make sure because I pick things up so furiously, sometimes I'm like, I think I got a rare item, but I don't know. I need to look at it and mull it over and think about it. And how full is my inventory now? Should I think about making a stop in town to get rid of some of this, or should I keep going? I just, with a game like Diablo, I take my time, and that could be frustrating.
I need some quick advice from people that are more experienced with Diablo than I am. Is finding magical items, is that a trap? Because I feel like I should just be stacking that as much as possible, because it's like a long-term investment. But I feel like if I start doing that, I'm never going to stop, and I'm just always going to be wearing magical items.
I think do what your character would do. It sounds crazy, because I don't think Diablo is a game that supports role-playing at all.
No.
Or maybe it supports some immersion, perhaps, but not role-playing. I mean, there's even the decisions you make in terms of attributes are going on. You don't customize your attributes. Do what your character would do. So what I'm saying is, don't try to min-max, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't know. You want to be effective. You want to, like, have an effective build in terms of damage that you feel comfortable with and are not, like, disappointed with. But beyond that, like, I don't know. Those are, like, gear is basically those are your decisions. You know, those are super precious. Yeah. Super precious. So whatever feels natural.
I'm going for as high a chance of magical item drops as I can. Just because my character.
Is it for the money?
He's in it for the money. He's in it for the best gear. And that's kind of a big reason we play Diablo is the loot. So I'm like, my character should be as invested in finding loot as I am.
See, I'll do that once I hit max level, but for now I'm all about +XP, because I would much rather unlock more combat options faster than to have gear that makes my existing ones better.
Yeah, sure. I'm excited to get up there, but I mean, I feel like I'm going to get to max level over time, and I just like collecting.
What is the max level?
60, I believe,
Nice.
Oh, wow. So you unlock almost everything. I think the final ability is what, like 40, 50?
40, maybe 45.
Damn.
Is there any max level progression system or anything? Or are you just...
It's just gear. You just farm better gear to get to the next difficulty level,
And attributes. I mean, I'm guessing they'll still increase.
Since you weren't on our stream before we finished, can I ask quickly, TJ, what's your favorite barbarian attack right now?
I think that the hammer one, just the default right click for the barbarian, I can't think of what it's called, Hammer of the Ancients or whatever it's called. It's just so fun to just
whack.
It's just, you just summon a giant spectral hammer and it sends everybody in front of you flying. And if you use a lot of lightning weapons like I do, there's like electricity flying on the dismembered pieces of them as they hit the walls.
So you're Thor, essentially.
Basically, yeah. That's nice. All I ever want to be in any game.
He's kind of a Thor-like character.
He is. Yeah.
Now that I think about that, I kind of want to play Barbarian more.
Yeah, that's me. Whichever one is...
Go have a little fight with Loki. It'll be cool.
Do it, man.
Whichever one is like the badass Viking. That's what I play as.
Cool, guys. All right. So again, we'll continue to talk about Diablo as we play it. Follow our review as it happens online as well. Tom Francis is basically putting all of his notes, like intricate notes, thousands of words of notes, in bullet point form, very readable, putting some hilarious screenshots in there of like rainbows and stuff that he's running into. It's also spoiler free. He's not like including weird story stuff that would offend anybody. So go check that out on our site. In addition to all of our other Diablo coverage, it's pretty comprehensive.
We are the Diablo 3 action news team.
That's us.
Yep. That's true.
That's us.
We have the suits to prove it.
Yeah.
So the other thing we want to bring up today, partly because I'd feel crazy as somebody that really loves Arma, not bringing it up, is a mod called DayZ.
You're crazy.
Which is still in alpha and is kind of exploding. I you know, it probably has about 50,000 unique users right now. That's grown from about 42 on Monday, I think. So thousands of players, new players per day for a mod in alpha.
And it took a game that wasn't on sale and nothing else going on to the bestsellers list.
Top
on
of the Steam charts. Yeah.
That's amazing. And hey, maybe you should put mod support in your games. Because it's making me really want to get into it. I had someone comment on my Steam page, hey, you going to play DayZ? Like, that's the first time in a while someone's bothered me to play a game with them. So
no joke. So as much as, you know, I'm going to try not to turn this into some long monologue of me saying things about Arma. Which has happened before on the podcast.
You can talk about tribes if you want.
Yeah, that's our comfort zone. Yeah, but this is we just want to emphasize, like, this is such an interesting experience. It is hands down, like, this is not something we throw around at PC Gamer. I'd like to think this is going to be one of the most interesting things that happens on PC this year. Whether or not you play Arma, whether or not you care about military simulation, our dream zombie game exists, okay? Like,
yeah,
you know, when you played Stalk, when you played Left 4 Dead, when you played Dead Island, you're kind of like, well, this is fun. And like, yeah, I put 150 hours in the Left 4 Dead franchise. I loved it, you know? I played custom campaigns. But, you know, it still enters your mind, the notion of what if Left 4 Dead had a barricading system? What if there was some persistency? What if I actually had to care about resources rather than just holding down mouse one everywhere I went? What if I had to feed myself or something? I don't know. Like, you know, those games are shooters more than survival experiences first, right?
Right.
So that's what DayZ kind of is. I mean, it's a player versus enemy versus player experience, persistent experience where, you know, all these players are in Arma's default map. Per server, it's about 50 or 60 or 70 players. And in addition to that, there are hundreds of zombies, AI-controlled zombies. And, you know, you as a player, you spawn in with very few resources. You have to feed yourself. You have to find food in houses and things like that, in barns and other places. This is a 225 square kilometer landscape modeled after the Czech Republic. It's like very foresty, and there's weeds and stuff. And the server time is actually, it mirrors the in-game time. So if you get home and you're playing on a server in New York, and it's 9 o'clock, it's going to be dark. You can't get around that unless you want to like have bad ping on a server in Russia or something. That's crazy. That's like a crazy connection to the real world. That's crazy to me. That's incredible. So beyond that, like, what's interesting about it? Why should I care about this, Evan? Right? That's
Evan.
That's what you guys are asking, right?
Yeah. What does this mean for a gamer like me?
Why should I spend $30 on Arma 2 Combined Operations, which is the game
so
I
is that what you need?
Yeah,
Arma 2 Combined Operation.
Which I actually bought Operation Arrowhead by itself, and I don't think there's any way to upgrade to Combined Ops.
I think you might be able to get it work with the free base version of Arma 2.
Okay.
Arma 2 free. Try downloading that. I just haven't experimented with it, but yeah, okay. It should work. So what's interesting about DayZ? Okay, so we did an interview with a guy on our site, a guy at Bohemia Interactive, started there in January. His name's Dean Rocket Hall. He's the creator of the mod. It's a story generator, you know, and I think we value that as PC gamers. I'm holding scissors.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so sorry. I'm just like waving scissors around as I'm talking about
this. He was threatening me.
The spirit of Logan is
getting excited.
He loves this mod so much.
Compelling you to.
And if you just Google DayZ, the best YouTube channel I can direct you guys to is youtube.com/ CH Kilroy, 1L, KILROY. This guy's just a hilarious and amazing Arma player. He knows what he's doing and just finds ways of bringing humor and real discovery in the game. But I mean, you can imagine, like, you're in this big landscape, right? And you see a player in the distance, And, you know, players can take your stuff by just killing you. That's, they can turn into bandits. They can operate that way if they want to. So just by seeing somebody, you're not sure what to do, not sure how to react to them. You could just decide to watch them. You could try to hide from them. So, like, this stealth mechanic starts happening.
Yeah.
Say you already have a friend with you and you decide to kill him, right? And you're using in-game chat, which is actually proximity-based. Mm-hmm. So the amount that I hear you is, you know, directly connected to how far away you are. Of course, you can use TeamSpeak to get around that. But so you actually whisper in-game, if you're using that system, to not be heard. That's realism, guys.
Yeah.
You know, like, whoa, that's amazing. But beyond that, like, it's the scarcity of resources, too, and that really forces you to make harsh decisions. It's an incredibly brutal experience. I mean, Arma is already known as being something pretty punishing, pretty challenging, even just in the way it's controlled and things like that. The ballistics modeling, it's hard to shoot something with a pistol.
Yeah.
But, okay, for example, so blood is like its own resource in the game. You can lose blood, and you have to restore blood either by eating like stuff slowly. Like you have a can of beans, you'll restore 200 blood out of 20,000 or something. But there's also a hospital on the map, okay? There's a few places on the map where you can get blood, like bags of blood. So you decide like, oh, I'm pretty low on blood, or my friend's pretty low on blood, so we're going to make a run at the hospital. Well, everybody kind of knows like players are going to be coming to the hospital for this. So they, you know, not because the game has told them, because they figured it out and they've decided, like, we're going to start guarding this area. I'm a bandit and I want to just kill players that are coming in this direction. It's totally organic.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So even when you get the blood, just an example of how brutal this is, you can't give it to yourself. You need another player to do it for you, right? Because it's hard to, I don't know.
It's not super easy to stick yourself with a needle and
exactly
hold up the bag.
So you need someone else to do it. So you need to make friends in a game that's brutal where you can't trust anyone. So it's just the layering of all these mechanics, right? Another example I like to bring up is like, so there are different kinds of backpacks you can bring, you can pick up. They have different like carrying capacity. And a new player kind of looks the same, right? He has like a baseball cap. He has a certain backpack. He has a certain pistol. So you can kind of recognize what a new player looks like. But in that way, you can also just make yourself look like a new player by carrying a certain set of equipment around. If you're not carrying a rifle, if you're not carrying night vision goggles, you look inexperienced and people might trust you better. They might try to manipulate you. You can like use that to your advantage, right? You can run into a group of people and get them to trust you by carrying certain stuff. Or you can make yourself a target or make yourself look more threatening by carrying high level equipment. There's all these like unique trade-offs that are just kind of inherent to the game and not like, you know, it doesn't say like +4 veterancy or something, you know, it's just there. Like you're seeing it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're creating your own Walking Dead experience on the fly.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there are some crazy stories out there. People have better stories than me, but the best one I've had was the second time I played DayZ, it was night and you're carrying flares around, which are actually like really cool. You can throw them and they illuminate and they're like really red and creepy. Mm. It's a super scary game at night, which is like different from the day. But I spawn in, and I hear a guy, like, minutes into this life, I see a guy being shot at. We're on the railroad tracks. We're by, like, a big shoreline where most people spawn at the southern area of the map. And I figure, you know, I'm new. I've got nothing to lose. If I die, I can just kind of remake this character. So I run in and just help him. I kill the zombie. We attract a few more zombies because firing creates noise, and that attracts zombies. And we kind of go back to back, and I'm like, you know, yelling instructions at him over direct communication, and just saying like, "Hey, let's stay here. Like, we'll be okay. You know, there's a guy over there. Go shoot him." And we fend him off, and we survive. And we're, you know, kind of looting through the bodies. Zombies sometimes have stuff on them, and you know, I'm asking like, "Okay, hey, can we like roll together? Can we go this way? I'm going east. You want to go that way?" He doesn't say anything back to me. And I start typing it, and he doesn't say anything back to me. But you know, he just sort of starts following me. I get the sense that he's less experienced than me, like just the way he handles the pistol and stuff. So we start heading east, and we encounter like a bunch of small towns that we kind of move through, gather a little bit of gear. I find a rifle. He finds some flares or something. And, you know, all along the way, I'm trying to talk to him because I think like maybe he didn't bind his mic key, or maybe he's a new armor player. He doesn't understand how to use it or whatever. It's a little complex. That's totally fine, you know. So we keep moving. And I'm still typing to him kind of intermittently. We kill some more zombies. We killed about 24 zombies. And like a half an hour through this experience, he just starts talking to me. He says something over chat in Italian. You know? So we found a way to survive in like the harshest, one of the harshest games ever, honestly, without knowing how to understand each other.
That's pretty awesome.
And that is awesome.
And we just happened to run into each other, and you know, admittedly, we both ran out of ammo, and then we just ran because like zombies were chasing us, and there's nothing we could do, and we both died horrible deaths.
So,
but
you made it pretty far.
Yeah, I mean, like, have you guys heard of Journey on PS3?
Yeah,
you know, a lot of people are making a big deal about this.
I was gonna actually bring that up as what your story just reminded me of, the idea of just without direct communication, sort of creating a bond and a trust with someone that you're just kind of going along together.
Yeah,
and it's really cool.
Yeah, and maybe it's, I don't know, it doesn't seem unfair to compare it to that. People made a big deal out of Journey for that reason, but
yeah,
I had this experience with a stranger. I got to know them and trust them and communicate with them without communicating in this really terrifying landscape, you know?
So these servers are persistent?
Yeah, so how it operates is you can log into any server, and when you do that, you create a character. If that character dies, you lose that character. But it's your characters are stored at a central location, so wherever you log off, whatever server you log back onto, say I log off in a barn, if I join a different server, I'm going to start at that barn.
Right.
So they're persistent across whatever server you join. Servers like don't like live on their own necessarily, other than like equipment on the ground and time.
And logging off, is there any, like, can you log off anywhere?
You can right now. It's still an alpha. Right. There's no penalty. Like, there's kind of a little bit of a policing system that admins are doing to prevent people from just, because you can, like, if you're in trouble, just hit escape and, like, it, you know, get out.
Right, and wait a little while, come back.
Yeah.
But is there, like, so there's no real end game. You're sort of just, if you get a character far enough, maybe you've built up some friends, you kind of have your little fort, maybe your bandits, and you continue to go along.
Yeah, it's all about sustaining that. I mean, there's this sort of counterbalance to, as you acquire more equipment, you become more dangerous. You can kill other players pretty easily if you find a machine gun, but people are going to hear that machine gun, you know, as opposed to a, like, old lever-action rifle, which is quiet, efficient, plentiful ammo, and common. You're not as attractive as a target, you know what I mean? So it's kind of in your interest to find this balance between, I think, kind of honestly, like a real zombie survivor would. You wouldn't just find the nearest machine gun with exotic ammo or something, or even like carrying around night vision goggles. Think about that in The Walking Dead. You know, people would come after you.
It sounds a lot like Eve in that way, that there's no real goal. It's just a big environment where, you know, people kind of band together and.
Well, it's kind of a funny concept to me that you jump into the game to survive. For an hour, a few hours, jump out, and next day you jump back in to continue surviving. Like, that's an interesting concept. It's not like you're jumping in the game to, like, I'm jumping into tribe to go capture a flag and win for my team. I'm jumping into this game because I'd like to survive for a while and see if I can not die. And that's interesting. And maybe in the process, I'm going to kill some zombies. I'm going to kill some other survivors and take their stuff. But ultimately, like, at the end of that session, I go, I did pretty good. I survived for an hour, and now I'm going to log off. And that's, I don't know, that's interesting enough to get me in.
You can think about time that way as sort of an intrinsic scoring system.
Yeah.
You know, it's based in reality, if you think about time as reality, rather than points. You know, points, it does keep track of your kills. It does tell you how many people or zombies you've killed or headshots you've gotten. There are scoring systems for that, but yeah, sustaining that and kind of just having moving experiences, honestly, is why people are getting in there. It is a remarkable co-op experience, though. Just like impulsively deciding, like, I've just had instances where, like, a friend and I are looting in a barn. We're just kind of, like, looking in every corner, looking for gear, deciding if we want to swap out this weapon, whatever. And a player wanders in, and it's like, you didn't expect that to happen. You've got to make that snap decision.
Suddenly have the standoff.
You either make yourself vulnerable by doing something like lowering your pistol, which is like its own animation within Arma, and like saying, like, don't shoot.
Right.
Or you assume that person's going to kill you, and you just blast them.
Yeah.
And then maybe attract more attention, make your, you know,
right,
make your situation worse. It's like, that's just so natural. Like, there's no experience out there like that. There's no game out there like that in a first-person shooter context.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of that within the context of a game where you can already be, like, sniping people from the bushes from, like, 500 meters away, and they would never even know you were there.
And then,
like,
just the idea that, like, with that local area of voice chat, the idea that maybe when entering a building, it'd be a good idea to announce yourself, hello, I'm coming, you know, that way if you and your friend are in there, you know that you're not startled to the point of just firing. That's like a mechanic I've never heard of in any game ever.
No, I think that's going to be the future of games like Battlefield, honestly.
Yeah,
that kind of technology. And ARM is way ahead in that regard. It's behind in some other regards, but in that way, it's so special to hear somebody moving like from left to right channel as they run behind you, or turn to like hear somebody better. That's pretty fun.
Yeah, and then, of course, we have Arma 3 to look forward to, and man, things are going to be pretty great. just looking at that game,
yeah, no doubt,
gives me shivers. And the idea of this style, like a DayZ style game,
makes me want to become like a warlord and just like take over the hospital and charge people ammo or something to come in.
There are people having those kinds of experiences where they get 17 kills in a day and they feel super good about themselves. They become this villain for a weekend, you know, that are just ruining other players. It's a deeply unbalanced game. This is something I talked to the creator about. It's purposefully unbalanced. You know, if you know where to find this weapon, you can trash people, you know, you can ruin their experiences, but feeling that way is kind of valuable. I don't know, in the context of, you know, there's a little bit of a presumption that you have to be a patient player to play something like Arma. You have to be willing to put yourself out there and deal with a little bit of frustration. Mm. But I don't know. I mean, losing something is like losing a character is valuable. Yeah. Like loss, you know? So few games. I mean, Diablo certainly doesn't have a lot of death penalties in place.
No, unless you're playing hardcore. But I mean, that's a decision. Yeah. I sort of like the idea going in that I can be like, that every player going in is sort of like, okay, I've been given the power to basically mess up other people's experience and kill them, but I don't want to do that. I feel empathy for them because I don't want to lose my character. I don't want to start a gunfight here. And, you know, if I had a better gun or something, I could go around terrorizing people. But the fact that it is there and it's okay for me to do, no one's going to say, I mean, maybe they will say, you're being a griefer, but everyone knows this is kind of part of the game.
Definitely.
And that I get to sort of make that ethical decision where I'm like, but I don't want to be that person, even though I could. I don't know. That's pretty interesting.
You can be a hero too. I mean, I've had experiences where I've seen somebody getting chased. I mean, there are a lot of novice players out there. There are a lot of people entering this experience because they're curious about it. You know, they're not right. Arma players, which is great. But people being chased that you pick zombies off them, you know, they're out of ammo or something and they don't know what happened. They don't know where the shot came from, but they're just sort of, they have to think in their minds like, oh God, thank you. Like, wherever that came from.
Which is great because it's also representative of the distribution of people in the real world, and say there was, you know, there would be some people who would act recklessly and end up with running away from a bunch of zombies, and then, you know, it would also be fun to be the elite sniper character who sees them and saves them. And
bingo.
It's pretty cool.
Bingo. I guess the last thing I'll mention that's actually really interesting, there's a crafting system in the game. Mm-hmm. So I mean, there's a hunting system, so you can, like, if you get a knife, you can butcher animals and cook food and stuff. But so obviously within Arma, stuff like helicopters and jeeps are pretty normal. Mm-hmm. They're military objects, but they're incredibly rare in DayZ, right? There aren't cars just waiting around. There are actually a few vehicles in certain spots in the map. So that's sort of becoming this, there are like rumors of things, like people will talk to each other in the chat, like, hey, does anybody know where can I get an ATV? But there's a crafting system for, like, repairing. If you see, like, a destroyed vehicle, you can, like, bring plexiglass, bring fuel, bring this, and fix it up. But, like, for the first time earlier this week, I heard a helicopter in-game, right? And it was this experience of, like, I thought it was like I'd seen a unicorn or something. Okay, like, separating the game context, imagine being in a zombie apocalypse and you hear a helicopter.
Yeah.
Okay, like,
right.
You stop, you get on the ground, and you stop doing everything. You just listen. You want to know where it is. But beyond that, okay, like, in order to craft this thing, I guess, you have to, like, find the objects first. You have to, like, gather all this stuff, like a rotor. it takes up an incredible amount of inventory space. So one player can't really do it on their own, right? Unless they spend an incredible amount of time. So people have to work together to build something, and they have to agree what they're doing with it and protect it and sustain it. And like, so just from hearing one sound file, right, a helicopter noise, how common is that? I was thinking about all this history of how did this object come to be? How did this vehicle come to be? Who built it? What are their intentions? Is it coming after me? Like, should I try and signal it? Can I build one? How many people does it take? Like, it just sparked this chain of imagination. How often does a game do that? That's so special.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Good stuff.
I want to go play it now.
Yeah.
I also want to play Diablo 3, so I'm a little bit...
Yeah, me too.
Man.
I'm torn. I'm going to be oscillating between those two games this weekend. So anyway, so sorry if I'm, like, just rambling.
I'll probably start on Saturday in the morning, so it's light out.
Yeah.
No, you should, honestly.
I'm afraid at night.
Honestly, again, sorry for rambling, guys, but this is really something, even if you're not going to play it, even if it sounds a little intimidating, just watch some video. Just knowing this kind of experience exists on PC as a gamer is inherently interesting. There's nothing else like this in terms of survival role-playing, in terms of player freedom, in terms of just the risk and reward inherent to certain actions and things like that, and trust and player trust and communication. There's just all these like things that should not exist for 5 years in games, in my opinion. So go watch some of these videos. There are plenty of people streaming it. The one I'd recommend, if I had to recommend one, is CH Kilroy on YouTube again. And go read my coverage on the site, please. Okay, so this has been the Diablo 3 and DayZ PC Gamer Podcast number 316. Thanks for joining us, guys. Send us some questions and comments about Diablo 3. Want to know how you feel about the connection issues and everything else? How you're enjoying the game? How you're not enjoying the game? I don't know. who's that? Come on.
There are people on the forums that don't seem to be enjoying it, but it's mainly because they can't log in.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we hope you guys are having a good time. Have a good gaming weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.